I would like to welcome you all for our 9th session of An Introduction to Self-Compassion with Robert Gonzalez.
Welcome. As we begin, I'd like to begin with our opening meditation. Just a way of attuning ourselves to the class and to the intention of being here together. Would like everybody to call your attention to just the sense of the feeling life in you in all of its forms. Quietly be with your life in your body, your thinking, in all of you. Be with the breathing. Notice it. Being with is a way of just patiently listening, patiently bringing presence to this mysterious inner life that flows in us. For me, the true essence of this life is mystery because we don't really understand what it is. And we only think we do because we have words and ways of talking about it and concepts that we overlay on our experience, which isn't entirely not useful. It is functional up to a point, necessary to make sense of our experience and to communicate about our experience. But when we go into the deeper part, there is a mystery to this life. We can't understand with the mind, but we can feel it, live into it. So just notice, be with, listen to that life in you, part that we call sensation. So if there's any feeling, can be said to be tense in your body, in your belly, your chest, arms, your legs. Any sensing in your head. The breath is the ever-present companion to our present moment awareness. As we breathe, we can begin to relax, not as a willful act, but as something that just naturally happens. Feel your feet on the ground. If your eyes are open or closed, notice the physical field of vision. Notice the sounds coming in through your ears. If there's any other sensations in your senses, smell, taste. And even though we're all sitting wherever we're sitting in our own private space, we are connected in some way. Maybe there's a limitation of the phone lines and can't really see each other. But there is a knowing awareness. You can be aware and know that there are others here that share a similar intention. Honor the life in us and the life in others. As you are with yourself and with the life in you, I'm going to read two different quotations from two different people with a space in between just to take it in. And after the second reading, if there's anything in this reading that resonates with you and you care to share it, there'll be a few moments for that. This first one is by Rachel Naomi Remen. Our listening creates sanctuary for the homeless parts within the other person. That which has been denied, unloved, devalued by themselves and by others, that which is hidden. I want to add that it not only creates sanctuary for the homeless parts within the other, but within ourselves too. Second one, the healing water speaks from within us, not as a teacher, an ideology, a belief, or even as a form of spiritual practice, but rather from the heart itself. We recognize something mysterious and sacred where we stand, and we will be cleansed as we kneel together to drink. All we need do is have the simple honesty to admit we are thirsty and need to drink. By Stephen Schwartz. Is anybody who particularly resonated with receiving either one or both of those readings, invite a couple of people to share whatever is alive in you.
That poem reminds me of the value of connecting with that thirst. It reminds me of a beautiful song in Spanish. The translation is something like, "We wander in the dark with only our thirst to guide the way to the source." I really appreciate this reminder to value this thirst within, this hunger that I'm tempted to cover up with food and other things. Thank you for that.
Thank you. I see another hand.
The very first line of Rachel's poem really resonated with me. Our listening creates sanctuary for the homeless part in the other. It reminds me of what Byron Katie says, that through listening, you help the other person find their way. And that way is the way home.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I really love that. The focus is a continued focus on self-compassion and the healing that occurs when we bring presence and compassion to our inner life. So the outline that I offered at the beginning has these next two sessions, 9 and 10, as healing through presence and compassion. So this inner territory is the same territory we've been talking about. And then each class is perhaps a focus on the same inner territory, but also just bringing out some different and specific aspects of it. So today, for me, some of it will be repeated, but some of it just may be new because each person is in this moment now and can receive what's being offered in a new way. So the question is, what is healing? To have a living understanding, not just a conceptual understanding, but a living understanding of what healing is, I think serves the practice of self-compassion. And in order to understand it fully for me, I want to remember what I view as the core principles of this work, the core principles of living compassion within ourselves and living compassionate communication or compassionate mutuality. So for me, I always want to remember these principles. The first one is that there is only one life force, only one life energy. There's only one source of all of life as it manifests in and through all of the different forms of life and manifestations. There are not two life forms, just one. And that on the human level, our human pain and suffering occurs as a result of the blocks, the obstructions to this life force. That whenever we block that natural energy that lives within us that is reaching for fulfillment, it's the blocks that we have constructed consciously and unconsciously through our conditioning, through our life experiences, through our woundings, that then create these obstructions. And when we live through the obstructions, through the blocks that take the form of our protective and defensive strategies and structures, then we are alienated from our essential aliveness, and then we suffer. And so healing comes with conscious and intentional compassion and presence. For me, it's the essential element that can allow the life force to be freed up. Essentially, the way I view healing has to do with the nature of suffering and pain. Within the knotted, pulled-in, constricted experience that is the form of our suffering, when we approach ourselves and others with this open space of compassion, allowing, non-judgmental acceptance, then that life in us responds with a kind of relaxation, responds with a resonance of being invited in to be seen and to be felt fully. And so when we, perhaps just even in a very simple way, open the empathic space to something internal that's going on in us, through the gateways of self-empathy and then the deeper gateways of energetic self-compassion, that yearning that was unfulfilled within us is released. We can be finally heard around this particular inner reality that's been painful, finally allowed to express, perhaps to express the tears and the mourning that is connected to the unfulfilled needs. And so healing happens in the presence of this compassionate space. We don't actually do the healing. It occurs just as a natural unfolding of life reaching for life. And so when we begin to practice on a regular basis self-compassion, unconditional self-acceptance, for me it's a way of transforming our energy more than it is transforming our perspective or our point of view. So for me, healing can be seen as a transformation of our relationship to our inner felt energy. And it's an energetic form of unconditional self-acceptance. So that if I feel annoyed, for example, in relation to something in life, it's easy to get caught up in the annoyance and the disconnection and blame myself or other people or even externally try to change circumstances so that I'm not annoyed. But this approach to energetic self-healing approaches that experience that initially we say, I'm annoyed, I'm irritated by this or that, and we feel, we enter into that actual energy of annoyance and listen to it and welcome it. And it's that listening that the poem referred to as it creates a sanctuary for those parts of us that were denied, unloved, and devalued, that we don't even necessarily realize that that's what we're doing. Healing can also be seen as restoring the rhythm of our life, that when we are able to relax, that perhaps the energy of irritation or annoyance or whatever form the pain is that we can, through the listening, we can sense into perhaps the mourning of the painful feeling of something that is not supporting our well-being. We find that it's our well-being that is reaching out. Maybe we're annoyed by the sound of somebody's voice or by somebody else's behavior. And in that experience of annoyance, underneath it is always the longing for our well-being that isn't present in hearing the person's voice, perhaps, in that moment. So there's always, behind every painful experience, the principle is there's always the rhythm of life within us trying to be restored, trying to be welcomed so that it can be fully felt. This next part has to do with, for me, what has been very significant for me in, and I'll just share a life experience to make it real so that it's not just talking about things, it's not just these abstractions. For me, I had a pretty dramatic shift, transformation in my relationship to my body sometime last year. And there's a lot of story leading up to the transformation, but the essential part of what I want to share is as a result of coming to my body in certain ways with the intention to heal and support, and as a result of some meditations I was doing with myself, with my body, and the condition it was in at that time, I experienced a kind of an awakening, so to speak, a realization about my body. And the essence of this realization was that, I know the concepts aren't new, this conceptually was not new, but the actual experience of it was quite profound for me and really shook me in ways that were quite moving. And what I experienced was that my body was not me, that my body was actually some being. And the image that came to me was, I have been in this body, identified with it most of the time. But I experienced that this body has a life of its own, independent, has a wisdom of its own. Incredible depth and complexity of all of the organ and organ systems and circulatory systems, the heart and the lungs and the brain, the skin. All of those systems have an incredible, awesome beauty that I cannot even begin to understand. And that the way I had been treating my body was one in which I was not fully honoring the body's needs. And I experienced the body almost as though it were an innocent animal, subject to anything that I chose to do to it, whether it was feed at certain foods, not exercise, do things that were not in the best interest of the well-being and the fulfillment of my body and what it wants. And when I realized that, it was a profound realization. There was deep mourning in me, profound mourning, that coming to my body in a way that seeing it truly as this life form that was not mine, but that was given to me as a gift in life to carry me through this life as my companion. And it was a profound transformation that really shook me to view and come to my own body as a friend, as a companion. That's something that I wanted to nurture and feed and give life to. It's not as though when I say the body was not me that there was any kind of dissociation or disconnection from the body. It was absolutely different than that. There was more of a profound, can't even think of the words, I want to say inclusion, welcoming, but it was a profound compassion that I experienced and a profound warmth that came with viewing and experiencing my body as both an intimate companion but as this innocent being, a completely innocent being, totally subject to whatever I wanted to do to it. Of course, I did experience some ramifications of it. You know, if you don't sleep, then your body will tell you so. If you eat too much of the kind of foods that don't make your body thrive, then you will pay for it in some way. Your body will suffer, and you will experience that as well. But the most important part of this was what I came away with as a deep realization was, and I think we can extend this, or I can extend this at least in my experience, with not just the body, but it's the other parts of me, the other parts of my person, my existence, and the parts of me that perhaps continually rise up in relation to life in ways that are not enjoyable, continually rise up with fear, reluctance, the judging mind, anger, moving away from life, continually rise up in the forms of the predominant forms of the protective and defensive parts of us as either fighting, fleeing from it, or freezing, the fight, flight, or freeze. And so my turnaround with these parts of me have come gradually, but the essence of it is now I can approach anything that happens in me more and more as my body, mind, my person is my friend, my companion. No longer want to make an enemy of something that is unpleasant in me. It truly is a sanctuary that I begin to build more and more and more. So the notion of body, mind, person, being, whatever this is, I described earlier as the form of our being, is truly a companion along the way in this life journey. And I continue to learn from that initial transformation of the relationship to my body. And I just share this as hopefully it can be meaningful in a way that can stimulate something in you of the possibility of approaching your own inner life in the spirit of self-compassion as this kind of companion, a friend, inner part that wants sanctuary, that wants the space, and that when we bring it, when we bring a certain kind of spacious, open compassion to any part of us, beauty always reveals itself. Basic aliveness always really reveals itself. That is the second part I wanted to share. I'm open to hearing any questions or feedback with anything that I shared, or any responses anybody has. Okay, I see three hands up.
When I was very, very young, when I would do something naughty, my mom and dad would take me to a nearby swamp, and we would throw the bad parts of me into the swamp. At a very early age, I learned to throw away the bad and welcome, give sanctuary only to the good. And the image of offering sanctuary to, I don't quite know what to call it, I don't want to use the word negative, I think I'm going to travel a long way with the image of opening myself and honoring and giving sanctuary to the parts of myself that for so long I've been feeling as though I needed to throw away.
Yes, thank you. I just really appreciate what you're saying. I think it's so important. And this is such a fundamental practice. It's so crucial to our own coming to ourselves with full acceptance. Those parts of us, it's hard to label because those parts of us that we don't like, that make it difficult. So it's so easy to have to judge those as bad, as negative. Even the notion of positive and negative, we've all been so profoundly conditioned. So thank you. I appreciate your sharing.
Last week, you said something about what do you want? I guess that was part of what we were doing. And I remember writing down that the essential heart of the matter was, I want a best friend. So now, today, I feel that this is yet another essential step in having that experience. And what you said does resonate, does make perfect sense. And I sort of think, well, this is so simple. Why didn't I see this? And then I think, well, driving a car is simple too, but if someone doesn't show you, you can't even figure out how the windshield wipers work. So thank you. This is really glorious to know that you and others in the class are going through this process. That also, I feel, you know, part of something. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate hearing that.
What you were just saying in the second part stimulated something in me, and I guess I'm wanting to say it to check my understanding of what you were saying. An image I guess I had as you were talking about the part of us that could be like a friend, this entity, is for me it's something that is small and hides away, like an entity that hides away and hiding in a dark place, and it's carrying a big sack full of dark things. And my sense is that in the self-compassion work and focus, I am wanting to give that entity some space and some light so that it can begin to stand up and I guess I hope be fully integrated into who I am. And then I have the sense of something about our community in this class, the longing that I have as this entity that hides away, to be able to fully express mourning and joy in a community or in a place where it's accepted. It's like it yearns for this place to be able to express more widely. And I'm wondering if you could give me any hints about, am I on the right track? Did I understand what you were getting at?
Yes, very much so. I loved both of the things that you expressed that are very much in harmony with what I'm sharing. Particularly, I love the way you expressed, as I saw it, is your unique way that it lives in you, this small part of you that hides away in a dark place with a sack full of dark things. And this is not just an idea, it's something that you feel, it's an inner reality. And when you give this part of you space and light, it's an energetic that you feel. It's not just saying the words, I give you space and light. The principle of healing is that this part of you, this aspect, this inner being, in its darkness, wants space and light. And then what's in there, what's inherent in that, in the feeling life of this part of you, is the longing for life itself. And I was sensing that the second part, what I heard is that this part of you just longs to fully express mourning and joy and yearns for a place to express this in a more wide place, perhaps a sense of belonging, of being with a group of people, maybe one or more people, that share this longing, that share this ability and willingness to be vulnerable and open with each other. That fit with what you said?
Yes, yes, thank you. I have a friend who went to a workshop with a woman named Sabanfu Somme, who's from Africa. She leads grief rituals, my friend said that this woman, her eyes were incredibly bright and her laughter was so clear. And this woman comes from a village where mourning and other expressions of life are continually happening. There's rituals all the time. So that in Western culture, she felt very out of place and depressed. And that's where I wonder about the community. If we are meant to express ourselves so fully, and if we had these avenues regularly available to us, maybe I wouldn't have this tiny part of myself hiding away in a corner. I don't know.
Yes. I think that there's two things that you said that are really important that I want to emphasize and sort of reflect back. One is the sense that what I heard as celebration and joy and aliveness, that for me self-compassion is not only about coming to our life that is constricted and in pain, but it's also about allowing ourselves to feel that life, that living energy, in a celebratory way, allowing the fullness and the sharing of this aliveness. So that, for me, is a very important part of this opening, because when we can feel this life force, that it often manifests in joy and in aliveness and in exuberance. And self-compassion, for me, is just as much about this life as it is about how we can approach ourselves from a more painful place. So the other part was, I totally agree, it's becoming more and more clear to me of how important it is that we are part of a community, part of a group of people that invites authenticity, that invites vulnerability. I think this is where, when two people or more people come together, this is the place where life is transformed, where the life in the between, in the we, actually transforms into something completely different. So I think that's so important. So even though we talk about self-compassion, it's not an isolated thing. It's just one particular focus of how we come to our inner life, because I think this life in us does reach out for connection.
Yeah, and that reminds me of what you said. The more often we come to these places in us that touch on that yearning for life and expression, the more often we'll draw it into our lives. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Anything else? Anyone else have anything?
The last sharing really brought it up. Sharing with a friend some of the joy about meeting some of the prickly parts with compassion and how beautifully they respond. And it was just trying to share this beautiful path with her, and she just didn't get it at all. The prickly part was self-hatred, and I was saying, oh yeah, I can meet it with a kiss on the nose, and it's so incredible. And she couldn't hear it, and she couldn't get it, and I felt sad, and I was just wondering, I know you feel the feelings and grieve and all that, but I guess I'm also asking if there's any way to, especially when this course is over, when we're trying to share this with other people, how to do that skillfully?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I'm not sure I can give it full justice in just a short period of time. But essentially, there's a distinction between, and I'm not sure exactly what you did in your interaction with your friend, but just a little bit that I gleaned from what you said is that when we share this, there's a difference between talking about the process and talking about what people can do, like kissing it on the nose or whatever you were saying, that is accurate, I think, if people can do it. There's a difference between that and actually living into it with that person. So that if she expresses self-hatred in some way, there's some life in her that's reaching out for something. So empathizing with that, living it, is the most important way to share it. I don't think that when people are in a state like that, that they're open to receiving a teaching. Rather, they're open to simply receiving our presence and our compassion for the distressing experience that they may be in. That, for me, is the most important part of sharing this kind of work, is we live it with the person. Was that a helpful response?
It was. The interaction was, I was actually sharing my own journey with my own inner stuff. So it wasn't really trying to teach her with her. I've been trying to share something which had been so beautiful within me.
Mm-hmm. And she wasn't able to receive that, to really get it the way you were sharing it?
No, it's like she's kind of pulling back. It's like, oh, that's too scary.
Yeah, I understand. And even that, I imagine that there must have been some disappointment or disheartenment because you so much wanted to be received with how rich this has been for you. And it wasn't met in that way. And what she responded to was, oh, that sounds scary. And so even that point is the point at which I would want to empathize with her. Really touch into, that's how she is able to take it in right now. It does seem scary because of the kind of learning that she and we all have taken place. My God, you're asking me to go into something that I've been trying to get away from my whole life. You know, that is scary. So I want to empathize with that and really say, yeah, I can understand that it is scary to feel something that is so unpleasant for you to feel, and you'd like some relief for it.
That helps.
Yeah, it's a very rich and challenging thing to bring something like this and share it with people. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, you have your hand up.
My sense is that this energy of self-compassion, this depth of feeling connection, it's a very unfamiliar place, I think, as you say, sometimes scary for people to explore. And when I try to share this with people who aren't living in that energy or familiar with it as much, sometimes what happens for me is, especially like if I'm sharing with a group, sometimes in the process of trying to share my experience, I start to go back to my own habitual ways of even disconnecting from my own experience. And so I've started to have a feeling that to look to create those sanctuaries of carefully chosen friends where I can really look for support to deepen this experience, and then being more careful when I'm trying to share it with others that, you know, I'm gentle with myself, you know, that I kind of open up and share with people that I feel I can create a positive experience with and not end up reverting back to my own self-judgment again.
I like what you're saying because it points to this part of there's a kind of discernment in the choices that I make about with whom that I am choosing to be vulnerable and open with in a certain way, particularly if I know the limitations of my own resources. Like if somebody reacts a certain way and it triggers me into my old patterns, I don't know how much that serves me. So there's a discerning choosing, I think, that I heard you make, and that the choice perhaps that would be most supportive for you is, as you said, to find people that you trust, that there is a trust, that there can be more of a connection there. And it doesn't mean that you may not choose to courageously express yourself in your vulnerability from time to time. But I'd like to balance that courageous, authentically putting yourself out with the kind of discernment of self-care.
Recently, I have been trying to put myself out very courageously and then feeling kind of caught up in old patterns myself for a couple of days afterwards. It's been a pretty painful, challenging experience, and now I'm pulling back and just, okay, I guess there was a voice that said I should be able to share this with everybody. Now I'm coming back to not that I'm not giving them enough empathy, and maybe if I just give them more empathy, and then I realize, actually, I just need to be a little more gentle with myself and take smaller steps.
Yep, I like that.
Thanks.
I don't see any more hands up, but I think I'd like to move into the part of this where we work with someone else. We pair it up with someone else. And for me, the point is this, not necessarily anything new, although I may add a new angle to what I'm going to ask you to share. This is about what happens that when we're able to actually connect with someone and just have a connection, just begin to the practice of mutually creating this space and the sanctuary for each other. I mentioned a particular part of our internal experience that makes it difficult, these patterns in us that make it difficult for us to approach our own experience as welcome or as friend. And one of the ways you can view these patterns is that they are a combination of either fight, flight, or freeze. As in fight, we may get defensive and express anger and justify ourselves. In flight, we're primarily avoid or we're fearful and we move away from ourselves and other people. Or freeze, we get locked up and numb or confused and don't know where to go with our experience. So I'm wondering if in bringing your conversation to this parrot exercise, that if it's relevant for you, I don't want you to go searching for it if it's not there, but if you can connect to that particular pattern in you, to share this with the other person and perhaps share a specific example of how you experienced stimulation of something and you were in a fight, flight, or freeze. And in that specific experience, in the sharing, can you approach that aspect with compassion, with openness, with empathy and acceptance, and how you can do that? So in the pairs, I'd like you to begin with just a check-in, and then the second part is, if it's an A and a B, A shares what is alive in you now, and if there is something particularly alive with a life circumstance, is this reaction or stimulation something that is an expression of fight, of flight, or freeze? And then can you, as the other person is listening, share your experience in a way that can be self-compassionate and give expression to whatever is there, and the listener can simply listen empathically, offer reflective feedback into whatever else is supportive of the person who's sharing. The person who's sharing can ask for specific ways of being heard or the kind of feedback you'd like to receive. So we'll do that each way, and then we'll come together as a large group, and we'll do some debriefing and some sharing on that. Thank you for that session. I'd like to ask, you know, each person to sort of sit with yourself, check in with yourself. How are you doing? How are you feeling right now? What is alive in you with what you just did with your partner? Feel into what is present there. I'd like to invite sharing in a couple of different forms. One is, I'd love to hear any celebrations or shifts or insights that anybody experienced in that practice. I'd also like to invite any questions for clarity or understanding that might support you in doing further work on whatever topic that you were working on. Also, anything else that's alive that you think is relevant to this practice you'd like to bring to me and to the group. I'd like to open it up.
Yeah, I was noticing in sharing this event that happened to me, it was a while ago, before I knew NBC, and that for many years I had sort of mourned this interaction I had with this woman and wishing that I had known NBC at the time that I had the altercation with her. And always in my mind, in my fantasy, I would think that the main thing I was wanting was to be able to understand her and reassure her, and I think that's true. And what came out for me today that I feel a celebration about was realizing the part of me, my anger, that didn't get an opportunity to express itself at the time. And I think that that part of me also mourns because it's wanted to express itself as well. I like knowing that, you know, there seems to be an honoring of that anger, which I have before tended to think of as something I should avoid or could be avoided or should be avoided. And I'm really changing my opinion about that.
Thank you. I especially appreciate what you're saying, particularly around the anger and how, understandably so, how it has a bad rap, you know, in life, in our culture. How it's bad and wrong, and the expression of anger has led to a lot of pain in people, a lot of suffering, physically and emotionally, and so it's understandable how we may tend to pull away from it. But what I heard in your sharing was an honoring of the anger. Now let me check this with you if it's accurate. It's not just the anger, but it's the life in the anger that I experience, that when we are angry as people, we're angry because something is important, because we feel passionate about something. And it's the life energy, the passion behind that which we are angry about really seeks expression, seeks to be heard. And it often takes the form of anger. So I'm really appreciating the honoring of the life that was in your anger. I'm wondering if that rings true for you in any way?
Yes, the anger was coming from my need to draw a boundary.
To say
that she could attack this far, but not further.
Yeah. So it was a way of serving life for you.
Yes. What you're saying, but just with more detail for my personal thing of just wanting to create a boundary. She was attacking verbally, and to just stand up for myself and say, no, here's where the boundary is for that.
Yeah, yeah. So the anger is really an expression of, when you say the words boundary and protection, really a way of serving life. You know, this is what I'm willing and not willing to have. You really want to support and serve your own well-being and give expression to that.
And I want to do it in a different way than I had before. I mean, my way of protecting myself before was to appease, to please, to flatter, to do whatever I needed to do to make this person stop being angry, but not in an authentic way, in any way that I could.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
That brings to mind an exploration around protection I'd like to address, but I want to do that after as many people share as possible here.
I was sharing my freezing and my frustration specifically in this class, feeling very moved and feeling a lot of appreciation and gratitude for people that share. And I especially felt it today when you were sharing the personal experience that you had regarding your relationship with your body. It brought up a lot for me, and I wanted to express that, but I froze. And it was interesting because my partner had a very same issue. And so it was wonderful being able to talk about that together. And I had a understanding around the freeze that I haven't really had before, which is the freeze isn't nothing. It's not really frozen. It feels like I'm putting my foot on the gas and the brake at the same time, and that causes no motion, but it takes a lot of energy. I feel like I'm expending all this energy, and there's all this movement happening in my body and all this yearning, and then I just freeze. It's very, very frustrating.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is even though it's frustrating, I'm hearing some insight, some clear awareness about what actually goes on when you experience this freeze, how much energy it takes, and how much there is there that wants to express, and the effect it has on you. I'm glad I'm appreciating that awareness and what it can take you to. And I think that all of these strategies, these ways that we hold back our life force or don't express it fully authentically, they do take a tremendous amount of energy, even though we may not notice it during the process, but it can be exhausting.
It is exhausting, yes.
Yeah.
I'm really yearning for more ease around authentic self-expression.
Yeah.
Thank you for hearing that.
Great. Thank you. So I see another hand.
I'm celebrating, first of all, because I haven't spoken yet on this telecourse, but I was Marjorie's partner, and she's kind of giving me the courage to speak also. I had the same or similar experience as her, as having difficulty being able to express myself, especially in these group contexts and the freezing that occurs. But I've had some pretty amazing transformations in the past week because I've just been feeling so much empathy from you and from other people in the class. I guess what I realize is how strong that force of empathy is and how transformative it can be just to empathize with myself and also with my judgments. And that's been really, really good for transforming something that's a really old pattern in me. I've even noticed how it not only transforms, like you said, it's an energetic transformation, and it really contributes to the flow of life. And it really is showing me how when you really have a strong need and when you have a lot of empathy around that, it allows the life force to kind of carry you. I just have a lot of gratitude.
Thank you. I appreciate your sharing, particularly when it's difficult. Just the willingness to move through whatever is there that might have held you back and that you have not spoken as much as perhaps as you would have liked, and I particularly appreciate that willingness to move through that and to express anyway. I'm very happy to hear the transformation that you're experiencing and kind of getting a double whammy with the IIT and this telecourse. So I'm really enjoying that. It's great.
I think I needed it.
Yeah, sometimes that kind of intensive exposure really can help break through some of those entrenched ways, patterns. So I'm really glad to hear. So, well, there's one question I think that has come up a lot around these protective and defensive structures. And there's a quote that I remember from a woman named Ruth Evermeyer. She's a woman who, in Marshall's earlier years, she wrote a book of poetry. I don't have the exact, very short quotation that she had in her poem. The essence of it is that we shift out of protecting ourselves when we realize that what we're protecting, what's essential, cannot be taken away from us. In other words, that doesn't really even need protection. That has struck me and stayed with me for many years, not just the quotation, but just the experience around these tendencies that we have to protect ourselves. And the question is, what are we protecting? It's been an important inquiry to enter into our experience, into my experience. And what are we protecting? From what? I think that sometimes the perspective, the easy perspective, is that we're protecting something from the outside. We often say we want to have a boundary, to set our boundary between me and another person, to set boundaries so that we protect something. So there's outer protection, but there's also the dynamic that really affects us when we're in this protective mode is the inner protection. And so we can say, well, we're protecting ourselves from pain or from feeling pain. And I think that's when we get down to it, we're getting closer to what we think we're protecting ourselves against. It's been my experience that while at a certain level of experiencing, that is an authentic expression of what we're protecting. The protective and defensive and survival structures that we have within our system comes from hurt and woundings and life experiences that have been very painful. And so the part of our mind doesn't want to have that happen again. I think there's a kind of a logic in this. We don't want to experience the pain because some part of our system remembers that if we're open and we say what we really want or we express our love or we take a risk, then our mind says that we will be rejected or that we won't be seen or any number of narrative thoughts that come up in relation to actually expressing ourselves with something that is authentic and real. So I just bring this up because I have found it very valuable to, as an inquiry, to inquire into experience. When we're in a protective mode, we can approach our inner experience and say, what are we protecting? Often the protection takes the form of when we're in a very vulnerable and raw and painful experience. So often the protection takes the form of, I won't be able to stand the pain. I can't handle this kind of pain. I don't want to feel the pain, because if I feel the pain, then something bad will happen or it's just too unpleasant. So there are a lot of versions of what happens internally. I think a lot of it is we're not aware of it. We are unconscious of it. And while I think it's important to be able to honor these protective and defensive structures and not to judge them or make them the enemy or to think that we should get over our protection, it's also valuable to be with it, to examine it, to explore, what am I protecting myself from? To really take a look at that. I just put that out as a kind of, as an exploration right now, and I'm wondering if that touches anything in anyone, if that stimulates anything experientially in anyone, if you're noticing your own, in your experience, your own protection. What are some of the experiences that come out of that?
Are you saying that instead of protecting myself against something that might be coming from the outside, you might say something that will hurt me? It is a part of myself protecting another part of myself?
Yes, I'm saying exactly that. For me, it's never what the other person says that hurts me. It's how I take it. It's what I do inside that creates pain.
That is so earth-shaking for me, that realization that I can welcome, offer sanctuary to, embrace the part of me that is protecting me against another part of myself.
Yes, that's exactly this key part of this inner work. That distinction that I make is also a very important distinction, that it's not what the other person does or says, or it's not even what the situation is, if it's just can be described as a life situation. It's how I meet it. It's what happens inside of me that will contribute to the pain, suffering, or whatever else is possible there. I'm glad that that seems to be creating some meaning for you, some clarity for you. And this for me is an ongoing exploration. I'm just sort of stimulating something initially that can be ongoing.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you. Thank you. I see another hand.
I like the acknowledgement that the way that I receive the stimulus has ultimately complete control over how pleasant or painful it is. At the same time, I feel a little shaky as I say this. It's kind of new for me, but also acknowledging that certain stimuli are more difficult for me to receive than others. And while I'm ultimately able in the long run to receive it in more gracefully, in the short run, there is a great value in protecting myself from stimuli that I'm not able to receive gracefully at this point. And I guess the distinction I want to start to make for myself is between unconscious, chronic, habitual posture of protection and a more consciously discerning and recognizing, making choices about what will support the sanctuary of self-compassion and what are situations where I'm in over my head, you know, and I'm actually going to slide back into self-judgment if I don't remove myself from the situation and get some support.
Yes, there's two things. I'm in absolute agreement that in terms of self-care, that is a particular discernment. And for me, the discernment is about, do I have the internal resources to be with this particular stimuli or not? And it's a way of assessing, yes, I do or I don't. And if I don't, then I want to be able to... Now, this is a part I want you to hear that's really important. It's not that I'm protecting myself against the stimuli, but I'm choosing to act on what I have resources for and what I don't have resources for internally. So for me, when I examine what I'm protecting, it's never protecting myself against the stimuli. The protection is always internal for what the stimuli triggers in me experientially. It's an internal protection for what's going on inside of me, not for what's going on outside of me. Now, that does not contradict what you just said around making discerning choices about who I choose to relate to or be in the company of. But I think I'm pointing to where is the actual dynamic occurring in terms of the dynamic of protection.
I think I'm starting to get it a little more clearly. Yeah, there's a stimulus out there. The point is it triggers something inside of me.
Yes.
And I need to protect myself from that until I'm
yes.
able to respond more gracefully to what's actually triggered inside of me. And the outer part is just a stimulus
yeah.
that might trigger this thing inside that maybe more pain than I can cope with in the moment, but maybe with more support I can cope with that pain more gracefully at another time.
Yeah, and I would substitute the word cope with approach it compassionately.
That would be even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just say I'm talking with someone, I do groups a lot, so I'm in a group, and there's 15, 20 people there, and then somebody walks out of the room. That's a stimulus. That could trigger an enormous amount of pain in me if I can imagine being in a certain state. I'm sharing something that I think is tremendously valuable and meaningful, and a person walks out of the room. Now, I could take all kinds of protective stances about that, even if I interrupted and said, excuse me, can you tell me why you're leaving? And that could be done from the energy of protecting so that I don't feel pain. But what's really going on internally is what I do with that stimulus. I interpret it a certain way. And it's the pain that's going on inside of me that I tend to notice those patterns of protection. That's just one example. That might not be the best example, because sometimes we protect ourselves against a little bit more, say, high energy or intense stimuli. Just say somebody who's angry, or there's an argument, or somebody is saying something that we can see as verbally violent to us. So it's not that those expressions don't carry an innate energy in and of themselves that's difficult to receive, because I believe that they do. But even so, how we receive them can stimulate these fight, flight, or freeze patterns that are basically structured to protect and defend something. I hope I didn't say too much with stimulating confusion, but I'll just leave it at that. I'm hoping that's helpful.
Thank you, Robert. That helps. Both acknowledging that there are outer stimuli that are more difficult to receive than others, but again, making it really clear that the pain or the challenge ultimately is to embrace what's happening inside. And that's,
yes.
So thank you, Robert.
Thank you. So you have your hand up. I'd love to hear from you.
I'm having an interesting experience because I'm noticing that I'm already reacting to the fact that this is the second to the last class, therefore next time will be the last class. And I'm noticing that I'm having a reaction to that, that I have the feeling that all the people in the class, including you, are abandoning me. So I'm able to notice that, and I'm saying to myself, I can use these tools to cope with however that feels, and there will be other classes, but I think without the things I don't want to say learning, because it's not just learning, as we've said many times, it's an experience that's shifting. Without that, I'm not sure that I would be able to notice that I'm having these feelings, and I think I would be by now almost completely withdrawn and just sort of going through the motions, but not really willing to, as you say, you know, be alive to the experience anymore. And I think I'd be having a lot of thoughts of, well, I don't really know they are anyway, or something along those lines. And it's a different experience. I'm noticing it, and I'm sort of have the courage because I have some tools, and there's a way in which I'm seeing that, you know, that's, I'm being compassionate to myself. I'm like, oh, in some ways I'm like a little child. I don't want people to go away. And that's kind of sad, isn't it? Yeah, it really is. That's probably something I could not have experienced before.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Really appreciate hearing, number one, the vulnerability in what you're sharing, and number two, the sense of the shift in your, what I'm hearing is your capacity to be with that kind of reaction in a different way, and to be more empathic with yourself about it. And if I were to take that just a minute or two longer here, I also want to say, I heard you use the word cope, and that may have the same meaning for you, but for me, it's just say your reaction. And first, self-compassion is about approaching your reaction by listening to it closely, and not necessarily believing in it, because you believe in it, that there's any such thing as abandonment, then that'll trigger that old pattern that you said you would have fallen into. But if you invite that interpretation that the class and I are abandoning you, so there's that part of you that I think I heard the voice at the very last part that you said, that perhaps is feeling scared and maybe lonely, and you're so much wanting support and the presence of another. So I'm just guessing that those are perhaps some of the feelings and some of the longings that you're having behind the evaluation that we are abandoning you.
Thank you, because even though I am doing better with this, that I can at least notice it, I hadn't taken that next step of saying, oh, okay, what are the yearnings? But that's very much what is behind it.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad. I'm saying this for just to help you connect and help me to connect with the life in you, the longing, but also for other people, other listeners, to hear that the principle is behind any reaction, behind any judgment, there is a longing. We can connect to it if we listen closely enough to the reaction, rather than shunning the reaction and thinking we shouldn't be this way, judging it, diagnosing our own inner reaction. We just listen for it. We say, so you see us, we're abandoning you, and I'm wondering if you're scared, and you so much enjoy the support of this shift and this learning that you're taking place. You'd love that to continue. Just empathize with that.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Really.
Does anybody else have anything present in you around this topic of protection, and what are you protecting? And okay, I see two hands up.
Reaction to what you were saying. I think it's about experiences as a child where I got some really overwhelmingly, I experienced overwhelmingly hurtful statements.
Yeah.
And it's like, as a child, I mean, I guess it's the same. I mean, it's a part of you hurting. You take the information, you know, from a parent, and then a part of you is hurting another part. But it's complicated when, you know, it's children involved and they're hearing awful things. And
Yeah. I'm wondering if you're hearing me say to you what I would say to a child, as if I were speaking to a child. Is that part of your reaction?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, what I'm saying, let me say it another way. I would never say to a child that something about the protection in the way that I'm saying it now, because a child, and actually even as an adult, that child part of us that protects doesn't have any other resource. That's all a child knows how to do. So when there are very verbally hurtful and painful things being said to a child, child in their innocence and their trust doesn't know how to deal with that kind of energy, that kind of message. So the natural mechanism of protection comes up, and I think it's important that that be respected, because that's all a child knows how to do. I'm not suggesting the child should do anything different than what they know how to do, that when they have resources to do. So I want you to hear that difference. And when I talk about the protection, talking about we as who we are now, having lived however many years we've lived, that there's an opportunity to explore and examine these parts of us, that we have protected other parts of us. And the path of self-compassion allows us to gently open that door of protection with a more allowing, compassionate approach.
Yeah, I think there was a wounded child hearing it as, I should have been able to hear that differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you're bringing that up, because I think that distinction is very important, because speaking to that wounded child, in fact, or in each of us, I really never want to pass on the message that you should be doing anything different than what you already know how to do.
Thank you for that.
Yes. Yeah.
Just wanting to deepen for myself a piece of learning that I got. So you were asking the question, do I have the internal resources to be with this particular situation or not?
Yeah.
And when I notice that I want to flee rather than, like if I notice that I'm starting to get defensive or reacting to something someone said in a way that I'm not really enjoying, and then I choose to just distance myself because I need the protection from this person. Like I'm telling myself I need to be protected from this person. So what you're really saying then is that it's not a protection from the person that I'm moving away for, that I'm actually internally protecting something that's going on in me that, I guess this is the piece I want to understand, is my protection by withdrawing, because I'm not self-connected and I don't really know what's going on, and there's a part of me that's just wanting to kind of like be held with some care by me in that moment, and that my desire to move away is really to be able to have that space of like, what's going on?
Yeah, that's very close to what I'm saying. I think that is in harmony. So that when you're moving away, for example, in the flight movement, it is an internal protection. Well, certainly it's obvious that you are moving away from the stimulus, from that person. So it appears that you're protecting yourself against that person. But internally, you're really shielding an internal experience from feeling some kind of pain that is imagined pain. It's real. But there's a scenario that's imagined that says, I can't handle this. It's too much. I will die. And behind that is the longing and yearning, just simple acceptance, just warmth, to be welcomed. It's the internal dynamic that leads us to physically move away.
And so the internal dynamic of wanting to protect from this imaginary, horrible pain that we're sensing that is just something, and that the gift of this moving away and having this understanding of self-compassion, then that's the opportunity to say, wow, that was really triggering. I'm really protecting, and I really want to understand. And that's where the understanding piece comes in. And it's a gift in withdrawing then, because it gives me an opportunity to deepen into understanding when I'm not around the stimulus that won't allow that anyway.
Yes, if you go that route, if you take that as a gift,
Robert, would you say then that if I move away long enough and explore this rich place of curiosity, of this protection, there will come a time then that when the stimulus is there, that I'll be able to like drop into, oh, there it is.
Yes, and then you can stand more in your authenticity and express whatever's there. You might even be able to empathize with that expression. And then express what your authenticity is. I do want to say one thing that is clarifying. Part of the pain is imaginary. The other part is real. We're actually feeling some emotional pain. It's a re-stimulation of an old wounding that's held in our system. So I'm not saying that's imaginary. But that when that gets re-stimulated, that other part of our mind says, I can't handle this.
So the stimulation of the old pain is what's real, but the thought that we had around the pain when we were younger is what's imaginary. I can't handle it.
We create a story about it, about how disastrous this will be, and I will never be able to handle it, or whatever it says. I notice that our time is a couple of minutes past the hour, and I also see that your hand is up. I wonder if you have a quick question.
You said something that just made a really big penny drop, that this internal experience that I'm protecting myself from actually craves my love and self-compassion. And that would explain why, as many teachers say, I continue to recreate outer situations that stimulate this internal experience, because ultimately that voice inside is saying, I need your love too, and I'm going to keep creating situations that invite you to experience and eventually love me. I love the beauty of that cycling and circling that invites me to embrace myself more fully. So thank you for that extra clarity.
Great, thanks. So we come to the end of our time. Thank you all again for being present. We'll see you again for our final class. Take care, everybody.